The Bible reading this morning is from 2 Samuel, the 23rd chapter, verses 1 and 2. Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, said, "And the man who was raised up on high, the anointed of God of Jacob, and the sweet psalmist of Israel, said, The Spirit of the Lord spake unto me, and by his word was my tongue."
Somebody turned that on me. Okay. It's good to see everybody out this morning. As we noticed in the reading Brother Bragg did for us, David was known as the sweet psalmist of Israel. When we think of the Psalms, we normally think of David. However, David did not compose all of the Psalms. He did compose a significant number of them. Before anybody starts getting worried about the length of the series we're about to do, I recognize he did so many of the Psalms that to do a series on the Psalms of David and cover all of them would be much longer than I could tolerate, let alone you all tolerate. So we're not approaching it that way. But in the next several weeks, as I am scheduled to do this talk, we're going to look at a limited selection of some of the Psalms of David. From my point of view, these are all Psalms of David that I have not preached sermons on before here at West Carrollton. And what I have tried to do is Psalms are classified in a number of different ways. I will have selected psalms of different types, but all authored by David, to cover in this short series. There's no agreement among scholars as to how many categories of psalms there are. I saw one scholar said there are 34 different types, and he named them, and another scholar said there's only two types of psalms. We're not going to be too concerned about that type of thing. But I will say that in the next four times that I speak, maybe five, as we look at Psalms of David, each one of them will be obviously a different type of psalm. And so we're going to begin with Psalm 34, and it's classified by many scholars as a wisdom psalm. That is a psalm that is very similar to the Proverbs in that it imparts practical information about life. It's also interesting to note, although we cannot tell it in our English Bibles, that Psalm 34 is one of the examples in the Psalms of an acrostic psalm. So if you read Hebrew and had a Hebrew Bible, every verse of this psalm, it starts with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, and the second one starts with the second letter, and so in Hebrew it would be very obvious that this psalm had this interesting construction, that in addition to composing the poetry, David took the time so that each psalm, each verse, each line started with the next sequential letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Because this is a relatively long psalm, we're not going to read it all before we begin this morning. But I'm simply going to break it into its natural segments as we look at this psalm together. So, beginning in Psalm 34, verse 1, "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul will make its boast in the Lord. The humble will hear it and rejoice. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together." The Psalms are often very prayerful in nature. So one of the values in reading the Psalms is that it helps us to frame our own prayer. And prayer is going to become somewhat of a theme of my time before you this morning. And so this is definitely true in this introductory stanza of this Psalm. David stresses three important things that characterize his approach to God. First of all, he says, I will bless Yahweh. And so this is David's attitude. The word bless actually comes from a Hebrew word that means to kneel. And to kneel before someone. The idea of David saying, I will bless Yahweh, is more the idea that I will bow before him seeking his blessings. And then he says, I will praise Yahweh. And that we will see that as we continue through the psalm this morning. And then he says, I will magnify and exalt Yahweh. And this describes the purpose of David's expression. It's not directed inwardly to himself, but outwardly to God. And that's one of the things that challenges us with the Psalms and with our thinking about God and our approaching God, that how often when we approach God, we're thinking about ourselves. We're approaching Him, but we're approaching Him asking things that He can do directly for us. And David is very careful, and I want to point out, not that he doesn't ask for things, but that he always approaches God in a way that he is directing himself to Him, not just thinking about himself. And in this psalm, this is the introductory stanza of this psalm, I want you to notice that David has two audiences he is addressing. First and foremost, his direct audience is God. He is speaking to God in this psalm. It is a psalm of his worship of God. But his indirect audience is what's so important to us, because he's really addressing those that would share his heart, and that is his attitude towards God. He's encouraging them, and I hope that would be us, to approach God humbly and joyfully. And so he goes on then in Psalm 34 and verse 4 to say, I sought the Lord. He answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. They looked to him and were radiant, and their faces will never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, saved him out of all his troubles. And the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and rescues them. So David basically says two things in this stanza. First of all, he says, I seek God. This is a psalm written by someone who desired a relationship with God, who believed he had a relationship with God, and he wanted to develop that relationship with God. And so he freely expresses in this psalm his needs and his desires concerning God. But the second thing he affirms here is that God hears those things. And he says, God hears me and he delivers me, he rescues me. Many of the problems David had are problems because he was in a position of leadership, because he had been anointed by God to be the king, and not everybody accepted God's will about that. And that had consequences. And so David often spoke to God in these prayers of the Psalms because he was under attack and he was being distressed by his enemies. But he says God hears it. The result of that is he delivers, he rescues, he saves. And I think it's important in this study to note that the occasion of David writing this particular psalm was that he was fleeing from King Saul, because God had anointed him to succeed Saul, and Saul did not surrender that throne. He tried to eliminate David and preserve the kingdom for his own sons. And so David had to flee and David had to hide, and he wrote this during one of those times when he was running from Saul. So, in other words, he had firsthand knowledge of this need and why he prayed this way. So one of the larger segments is Psalm 34, verses 8 through 14. O taste and see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. O fear the Lord, you his saints, for to those who fear him there is no want. The young lions do not lack and suffer hunger, But they seek the Lord, but they who seek the Lord shall not be in want of any good thing. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Who is the man who desires life and loves length of days, that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lip from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. One of the interesting things about this particular stanza is that David challenges his readers to taste the Lord, to taste Yahweh. And it's interesting, that word, and the insight we get from that. The word taste actually comes from a word that means test. And so what is he saying when he says test the Lord or taste the Lord? The way to look at that word is to look at it in a very common way. If you watch someone who is a good cook in their kitchen, and they are preparing a dish, whether it's one of their own or they're using somebody else's recipe, what you often see, and what I remember is because the first time my mother watched Debbie cook, she cringed. Because with my mother, she would taste what she was cooking, but every taste required a clean spoon. And the first time Debbie tasted something, put the spoon down, did a little bit more, picked up the same spoon and tasted it, I think you probably heard my mother groan three counties away, you know. But why does a cook taste and then do some more and then taste again? They're testing to make sure that they get the results that they are wanting to get from their effort in preparing the dish. And what David challenges us to do is to taste the Lord that way. He's telling us he hears and he will answer. Well, how do we know that? If we don't ever call upon him, if we don't ever take this challenge to see what God can do in our lives, then we do not have the experience that David had. So David is inviting his readers to approach God the way he has suggested. And David says, if you do that, you'll get results. David is confident in the results of such a test. Now, he says that we are to fear Yahweh, and if we fear Yahweh, we will receive the blessings. And it's how he uses the word fear here. The word fear in the Old Testament could be used about 14 different ways. And including the obvious one of being absolutely terrorized by something. But David's probably not using it in that sense, because one of the ways it's often used in the Proverbs and in the Psalms is this idea of having a reverential awe and respect for God because of who God is. He is a righteous God, and the things in which he directs us will result in us having righteous behavior. And so the idea of fearing in the sense of seeking to have righteous behavior and pious devotion to our God. And David says God will provide for those who thus approach him. And so his exhortation to his readers is, you keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from peace, depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. So he says you need to have that devotion to God that will cause you to be motivated to follow this practice of worship and prayer. Then in verses 15 through 18, he says, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against evildoers, to cut off memory of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. So David describes the character of this God that he encourages us to approach with fear and devotion. And he talks about him. And he says he's aware and concerned about his righteous servants. He is not a God of the deists. The deists were philosophers, and a lot of our founding fathers in our country were deists. They believed in God, but they believed in a God who created the world and then stepped back and let things happen and didn't interfere within the things that were going on. But that's not the way David characterizes Yahweh. He says Yahweh is aware of what is going on. He's concerned for the welfare of his righteous servants, and he is opposed to evildoers. Therefore, in this stanza, what David says is that Yahweh will act. He hears and he delivers the righteous, David says. And David says he is near and he will save. Now, it's interesting to note that in this stanza, David does not specifically mention God's response to the evildoer. And so, the implication of the psalm would be, this is what God will do for the righteous. This is what God will do for those who seek him. He doesn't do that for those who oppose him. And then in the final part of the psalm, Psalm 34, verses 19 through 22. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. He keeps all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the soul of his servants, and none of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. So David concludes this psalm with an important observation and what I would consider to be a magnificent promise. Now he observes that many are the afflictions of the righteous. It's very important as Christians that we note that David does not promise that the righteous will lead problem-free lives. That promise is never made in Scripture. And in fact, the opposite is just affirmed. David says, yes, we will have afflictions. And David was writing from first-hand knowledge, because he, as God's servant, was suffering some of those afflictions. Problems are the norm in a sin-ruined world. And we may strive as much as we can to be righteous, but we still live in a world that has been ruined by sin. And it will impact our lives. And God's people are not immune from the problems that come from living in a sin-damaged world. One of the interesting things about this psalm is that John quotes it in verse 19 in reference to Jesus on the cross. John 19, verses 33 and 36. And that would indicate to us that even the Son of God, God incarnate, when he came to earth and took upon human form, also had to deal with what passed the human nature and human existence as a result of the sin of sin entering the world, as that he also had to suffer those afflictions. And so David says we're going to live in a world of trouble, and he's exhorted us to be motivated to call upon God to help us and to help the righteous in that world of trouble. And so he ends the psalm with a promise. Evil shall slay the wicked, and those who hate righteousness will be condemned. The Lord redeems the soul of his servants, and none of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. And so we are encouraged to approach God, to seek to do his will, and trust that God will protect us, and that God will give us what we need to get by in this life. Brother Richard has the closing prayer, and after that prayer, we will take a short break and begin our Bible classes this morning.